Yeah, Robin, just play the line.
King Kong ain't got shit on me!
Mm-hmm. That was an ad-lib, you know.
I did not know that.
That was improvisation.
I'm also vaguely concerned that I won't be able to find that clip because I'm not going to say the word yet because I'm not ready to cut it in, but it's got nothing on me in the green band.
Yeah, close enough. Yeah. Sounds to me like you're going to need a bigger boat. Ain't got shit on Denzel. Training Day was the number one movie in America.
Oh, I thought we were through the thing.
what's the difference?
I don't know. Yeah, that's okay.
We make this shit up as we go.
Right. It's our show.
That's right. We do our own rules.
The number one movie in America. The number one movie in America.
Whoa, number one.
The number one movie in America.
Number one.
The number one movie in America.
Oh, wow, number one.
The number one movie in America.
Number one
movie in America.
Movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Hello, my name is Sean Collier. I'm here with two Shatari, who really thought they were better warriors than they were. It's Camila Adams.
Hi.
And Robin Hitchcock.
I'm always angry.
The Avengers. The Avengers.
That's right. The one.
The Avengers. 80 and a third. That is not our highest rated MCU movie. Barely. Iron Man 3, 80 and two thirds.
Yeah, that's sort of how I feel.
I feel like Iron Man 3 is a good jump over The Avengers. But
okay.
You know, that's the thing. They're all, I truly believe the scale for MCU movies begins at like 65 and goes to 92. Like the rest of the numbers are not relevant. Black Panther probably breaks the scale a little bit.
No, I agree. That's about, that seems like a decent range because there's not any of them really that I'm just like,
yeah.
I mean,
proper MCU.
Right.
There are ones that I don't like, but I wouldn't give them below a 50.
Right. Yeah. You know? Like they don't vibe with me or whatever reason. It's not funny enough or it's not my favorite Avenger. So, but I still enjoy them.
We'll see how that does in a month, and we might even check in with DC later today. But right now, a pillar of early aughts cinema. Ooh. I said I had not seen this. I apologize both to you and myself because why did I deny myself this for 25
years? Yeah, I forgot. This is gonna be great.
Yeah, your history with Training Day.
I saw it when it came out, not in the theater, I don't think. And I thought it was really good. And I watched it again sometime in the last 5 to 10 years and continued to think it was really good. Mm-hmm. And I watched it this week for this episode and I continue to think it's really good.
I am shocked this doesn't, I guess it's an era thing. I guess we don't get a lot of like come to the movie theater and watch Training Day or other things from like late 90s, early 2000s. Like most of the like throwback screenings are 80s and early 90s stuff.
Yeah.
But I can't believe that repertory houses and places are throwing this on the screen once a year because I would definitely go to see Training Day.
Yeah, maybe it has something to do with just like the rental cost of it all. Mm. And people still think that it's kind of still too new for somebody to go back and be like, oh yeah, I didn't get to see Training Day on the big screen as opposed to Lost Boys.
25 years.
I know.
Let me have new movies.
Let me live in my delusion.
I was like, wow, everybody looks young.
I know.
It was weird.
Yeah,
Ethan Hawke's old teeth.
I was like completely, I was like, oh my God, baby Ethan Hawke. And was this like his resurgence?
So he's such an interesting career. I love Ethan Hawke.
Oh yeah, me too.
And he was like a child actor basically. Right. And then he was a bit of a heartthrob. Mm-hmm. And then it was like, okay, well, I've sort of aged out of heartthrob status. What am I going to do? And he was like, I'm going to play weird videographer Hamlet and I'm going to do Training Day. And
this is before Sunrise.
Before Sunrise is 1995, I want to say, or maybe 96. Yeah. So I should know that it's one of my favorite movies.
Yeah.
So that's Heartthrob Era. Right. Yeah. And Reality Bites, in which he plays one of the worst people to ever be put on film. But he's hot doing it.
But it's funny because he was never my type. Like, I never was like, found him as a heartthrob or anything like that until he got to his old man, Professor Cardigan.
And he is.
glasses stained and was like, oh, hello. Whatever that horror movie was, he came back in.
The Purge?
No.
Black Phone?
I forgot he was in that. No. They're in between. In between the two. Insidious. Sinister. Yeah. Sinister was more like, all right, let's welcome back, Ethan. Yeah. And I appreciate you. But yeah, like I've always appreciated him as an actor.
Did you see this in the theater?
Yes, I did. And I'm pretty sure just because it was Denzel and it's an interesting concept. It's an interesting storyline. And it's like, yeah, fuck yeah. I'm going to go see this in the theater. And I've probably watched it completely like maybe 3 or 4 times since the theater. But there have been numerous. It is absolutely one of those. Oh, it's on. Like if I had.
I'm not turning this off.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And like or like I would just pop it on before I went to bed or something like that and just like fall asleep or whatever. But it's definitely like a. When you had cable at that point, it would be like a day changer. Oh, I had shit going on, but not now.
I love that kind of movie. I love that feeling.
I think this would be that for me, too. And I don't. And I still have cable. It could happen. But I, the thing is, I don't really do that with crime movies or cop movies. You know, like maybe Goodfellas.
Yeah.
But I'm looking for Scream or Jurassic Park or you know, that's not what I'm looking to throw on there, but this I absolutely would because it's every scene is just kind of like this is high fascinating
and it's high stakes throughout the there's so much tension the entire fucking movie like every scene Denzel and he keeps us on our toes throughout the whole we're getting ahead of ourselves.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But like that, you know, the very first scene with him and he slams his hand on the table, right? That's exactly what you're talking about. Right. He keeps us on our toes.
It's like, oh, okay. Hi.
Well,
he's
because
a live wire.
Because it's the rare movie where they imply that someone could get shot at any time, but here they actually could.
Yeah. Right.
Most of the time, that's like, maybe one guy at the end. It's like, no, anybody could die at any point in this movie. A lot happens. I don't know how this is going to go. I apologize to my co-hosts. I truly was late because I was trying to recap this movie. And even now I'm like, is that why they talked to him?
It's a busy day. It's a hell of a day.
Tell me when.
Go.
Jake is a young idealistic cop who's in line for a promotion to an elite narcotics unit run by incredibly charismatic and air quotes highly unorthodox cop Alonzo. Alonzo takes Jake on a one-day training evaluation, kicking it off by forcing him to smoke confiscated weed, then revealing it was laced with PCP. They meet up with a retired dealer, then Jake prevents an attack in an alleyway, which Alonzo finds mildly amusing. The pair shake down a small-time drug dealer for information, rob the home of a mid-level dealer, then go to meet with their superiors who reveal that Alonzo is being pursued by the Russian mob for beating up the wrong guy. We rally the rest of Alonzo's troops who go back to the home of the retired drug dealer, take his multi-million dollar nest egg and kill him. Alonzo blackmails Jake into saying that Jake was the one who pulled the trigger, lest Alonzo literally narc on a narc over the whole PCP thing. Alonzo plans to take the money and pay off the Russian mob, then arranges for Jake to be killed by some gang members. Whoops, turns out the victim of the attack Jake prevented earlier in the day was the cousin of Jake's would-be killer. What are the odds? So they let him go. Jake returns to confront Alonzo, nearly gets the better of him, leading to a street fight in gang territory. Sick of Alonzo bullshit, the neighborhood protects Jake. Jake leaves with Alonzo's bag of stolen money. Alonzo drives off and gets killed by the Russian mob, and everything's tied up in a neat little package.
8 seconds over, but that was good.
It was a big day.
It is. It's a big, big day.
The trailer.
In the next 24 hours, you will learn about the streets, about the choices that will force a dedicated cop over the edge, all in the name of good. In the next 24 hours, the only thing more dangerous than the line being crossed.
Today's a training day, Officer Hoy. It's your chance to give you a little taste of reality. You think you can handle it?
Is the cop who has crossed it.
I will do anything you want me to do.
Will you?
We'll see.
They build jails because of me. Judges have handed out over 15,000 man years of incarceration time based on my investigations. You got today and today only to show me who and what you're made of. You hear me?
Police officer, get away from the girl!
No, we're not racking up arrests today. You let him go. What more you want?
I want justice, right?
Is that not justice?
That's street justice.
What's wrong with street justice?
Oh, what, just let the animals wipe themselves out.
God willing.
You can't be like this.
Open your eyes, can't you see?
Police, we got a search warrant.
You ain't no police!
I think you're a rogue cop.
Learned a lot of things on these streets, boy. Good things and bad things, too.
I'm the police! King Kong ain't got nothing on me!
You never know, that's the point. It's gonna have to be a nice day, huh? It'll get dark, guarantee you that.
Really pushes in 24 hours.
Yeah.
And I feel like it needed to because I kept going like, shit, this is still the same training day.
Right, yeah, exactly. And I think that's the one of the biggest plot points that's like so important in the whole thing, because this could take a week. Like, this is like all of this shit that happens. Like, this is one season of a TV show.
Yeah, right? And that was something that critics at the time were pretty harsh about. Mm. I watched the Ebert and Roper, because this was after Siskel had passed, and Roper hated this. He's a bad film critic, sorry.
Wow.
And he was like, it's so implausible that all this would happen in one day. And Ebert was like, yeah, it's over the top, but, you know, have you ever seen a movie before?
Right. So you're saying that dinosaurs can happen.
He was like, he's like, it's allowed to be over the top, but he completely agreed. And like, you know, I'm not going to deny that there's a lot going on here, or that, you know, as you sort of alluded to in your recap, that big coincidence does not make you go, okay, well, that's a real big coincidence.
Yeah.
But like,
but I love the fact that how at some point Alonzo is like, you know, I've been planning this all week.
Yes.
Basically. Mm-hmm. And like everything that he's been doing all day has like been setting Jake up. And he's like, you know, everything is going according to plan, except that one thing, that one fucking thing that he could not plan, that he did not count on happening, is what saves Jake's life.
You're so right.
And I love that.
Like, yes.
No, narratively, it's, you know, they teach you in theater school, theater is the day that something different happened.
Yeah.
Right.
It's supposed to, it's not, I know we have slices of life where.
We'll get to it.
Oh, yeah. But no, yeah, it can be accepted. Yeah, that's a big coincidence. There's a number of like, really? That all worked out in that. But
what
that's
I learned
fun,
when so. I took a playwriting class in high school, and they say you get one. You get one coincidence.
But I kind of like that. And by the way, David Ayer, who is wildly inconsistent as a filmmaker, has great work and bad work. Screenwriter here, you know, he apparently was the only person to ever touch this script.
Oh,
like,
wow.
There was no punch-up people. There were no other drafts. It was him beginning to end.
Well, why would you need a punch-up person when you got Denzel Washington?
Right.
He's like, his own punch-up person.
Right, exactly.
But you said he improvised?
Right. Yeah, improvised the King Kong?
Yeah, that was an ad-lib.
On the fly.
Mm-hmm.
Not like, oh yeah, I'm gonna go home and write some shit down. Like, it was just like, I am fucking Alonzo. Like,
Colin and I were watching Survival of the Thickest, and they referenced that, and he was like, do you think that is Denzel's most famous line?
Probably.
And I was like, I can't think of another one.
No.
Yeah.
The only other thing that you would like instantly like would be the glory tier. Like, and it's not even a line.
Yeah, that's true.
You know?
Like that's going to, you know, be in his montage
right.
when they, I don't right. want to think about it.
Right.
I still wait. Sorry, I memory hold something. We are jumping to a segment that doesn't exist. This isn't even You Can't Handle the Truth. This is trailer talk. But because I'll lose it again because it's so fucking weird. Have you seen the trailer for the
Tom Cruise movie?
Yes.
What the fuck is that?
I have no idea what you're talking about.
So Digger. there's a trailer for Digger that is like it's like a Tom Cruise in memoriam.
Yeah.
It's 3 minutes of clips from every movie that he's ever been in, and then 45 seconds of, and now he's in this.
Like, and I don't know what that has to do with anything.
Yeah, weird.
It's so weird. Like the last thing is like, all of these movies are available to stream now, and it lists the 40 Tom Cruise movies you just saw a clip for. But it's everything he's ever done.
It's wild.
It's like the end of Jay Kelly.
It is like the end of Jay Kelly.
Which I loved, which made me cry.
Well, maybe you're going to be crying in the trailer. what's the point? Denzel
is the greatest actor of all time, period.
Right. Shout out. Maybe any other quotable.
Maybe it's because we did the episode, but the first thing I think of is they tried to kill my wife.
Oh, yeah.
From American Gangster.
Oh.
And I guess also the general, my man.
Right.
From see every film.
Yeah.
Training Day came out October 5th, 2001. That release was slightly delayed by 9/11. This was originally...
Which Roger Ebert mentioned. He was like, this was in his review, not on the show. He was like, there's a little bit of a concern. Are people willing to watch a movie about bad cops at this time when everybody's obsessed with cops? And I was like, they're more obsessed with firefighters.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, I feel like we're stretching.
I mean,
like,
no disrespect, I'm sure.
No disrespect.
none whatsoever, but yeah, that's not the same.
Originally scheduled for September 21st. Several films, particularly anything that was more violent or bleak, were delayed a little bit. So it came out October 5th and became the 28th number one movie of the year with an opening weekend of $22.5 million,
Hoot.
Beating the debuting Serendipity at $13.3 million and Joyride at $7.3 million.
Is it that what you watched?
It is. That's what I watched.
With John.
With John, yes. Cusack.
Mm-hmm. Not a number one movie. Did you tell him that? Did you say? Why did you lose to Training Day, Joey?
No, but I did tell him that I'd spent all week watching so many of his movies, and he was like, do I owe you money?
That was the first weekend. It won a second weekend. It was $13.3 million in its sophomore weekend, defeating Bandits, $13 million.
I need a hero.
And Corky Romano at $9 million.
Oh, my God, forgot about that.
Yeah.
So it's a two-week winner in a year with 35 number one movies in America, because this was that era.
Wow.
The Everything
this
Wins a Week.
Denzel.
Preceded by Don't Say a Word, a psychological thriller I've never heard of.
Don't Say a Word is on our list.
Brittany Murphy. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was going to say, I have seen that
Michael
movie.
Michael Douglas. I saw it too.
Isn't she in a mental hospital?
Yeah.
Yep, seen that movie.
I remember walking away disappointed.
Yep.
Followed by From Hell, which we vetoed.
Thank God.
Both one-week winners, 6 weeks in the top 10, $76.6 million, 29th for the year. Expensive Baubles.
Expensive Baubles.
This one's pretty easy.
Denzel won. Ethan was nominated.
Oh, he was nominated?
Yeah, which I remember at the time people were kind of like, okay, coattails nomination. And I'm like, no, he is genuinely great in this movie. Mm-hmm.
He is. And I'll give him that because I love how you see the gradual progression of his body language. Mm-hmm. Like when he starts off, he's like, yes, sir, blah, blah, blah. And then by the time he starts to really ease into it and he starts to kind of mimic Alonzo.
And he also does a really good job of... You believe the extent to which he is uncompromising, right? Because that could become a little eye-rolly, and it just doesn't. You believe him as a good person.
Right, and I think that, and I love, and if it was subtle or purposeful or whatever, but like in the beginning when Alonzo makes that off-the-handed comment about his wife, like, oh, if you need a son, let me add her, kind of thing. And he's just like, all right, don't talk about my family.
Yeah.
And that, I think that right there is a great, like, pinball. It's like, okay, yeah, we can see straight up, like, yes, this dude is above board. He's not about that life. Like,
yes.
So to speak.
That, yes, Ethan Hawke lost to?
Jim Broadbent in Iris.
What the hell's Iris?
What is that?
It's about Iris Murdoch, who's a writer. I have seen it. I couldn't tell you much more about it. She, I believe, has dementia. It's sad. Yeah.
Denzel winning in, I mean, really as all-time a lineup as I can name.
Okay, let me see if I can do it.
Okay.
Okay, so Russell Crowe for Beautiful Mind.
Mm-hmm.
Will Smith for Ali.
Mm-hmm.
Jeffrey Rush for Quills? Is that not right? No, that's 2000.
If you'd like to know why one of these people didn't win, you could...
Sean Penn for I Am Sam.
Can't play the clip. Not going to play the clip.
Not going to play the clip. But that helped me right
from
away.
From Tropic Thunder?
I'm not sure what else.
Tom Wilkinson in the Bedroom.
Ooh, which so is good.
Such an underrated
movie. Oh my God, that movie is so phenomenal. I made my dad drive me to a couple towns over because that was the theater that was playing it. And... he was like, was it worth the drive? And I was like, yes.
Mm-hmm. that has the most devastating beginning of the third act.
God. Of oh maybe my God. Any I should rewatch that. Oh, I don't think so I've good. Seen it since then.
But really, and I'm not a big Russell Crowe fan, but just the Denzel Russell Crowe and Will Smith is like, I have no idea who to give it to. Sean Penn, obvious flaw of that performance aside, fully committed performance. Right. And Tom Wilkinson as the fifth.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah.
So there was a little bit of a narrative at the time that Will Smith should have won mm-hmm. for Ali, and that it was...
And look how he acted when he didn't.
and it was like, why is the Academy honoring a black villain over a black hero? Thoughts?
Because Denzel Washington is Denzel Washington and Will Smith has a ceiling of being Will Smith.
Right.
Yeah, I kind of agree.
And I never saw Ali.
Because it's pretty good.
But because of that, because it's just, okay, this is Will Smith doing whatever. Like, yeah. Will Smith yeah. is now Ali. Like, it's not, I've never seen him disappear into a role.
Yeah.
And I know that there is a lot of discourse about, like, why is this the one that Denzel got the right. best actor one? Because he was the bad cop and bad guy. And, yeah. The only other thing prior to this that I would have said would have been Malcolm X, and I don't know, to this day I will still hold that, like, I will still hold a grudge.
Everybody
that
will.
Right, but, you know, I think that the right man got that award.
In retrospect, it's easy because we know how that night went. I'd give Will Smith's other Oscar to Denzel, because Denzel was up for Tragedy of Macbeth.
Yeah, and he was great. Yeah. I'm Thane of Cawdor.
or to Cumberbatch.
Yeah, he was good, but no.
He's not that good in King Richard, because King Richard isn't that memorable of a movie.
Right. The person who's really good in King Richard is Anjanae Ellis Taylor. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I watched Malcolm X and the Hurricane this week because the other narrative around that Oscar season, which we were sort of alluding to, is that this was a makeup Oscar, right? And obviously Denzel Washington should have won for Malcolm X. Obviously right. Malcolm X should have been nominated for Best Picture, et cetera, et cetera. It is one of the greatest movies of all time. It's just so fucking good. I hadn't watched it in a while. I can't believe, sorry, I know this isn't a Malcolm X podcast, right. but like, I cannot believe how every single piece falls into place in that movie. Every performance. It's
Delroy Lindo also. Lindo,
absurd that he was right. not nominated. Absurd. Exactly. And Angela Bassett. Absurd she was not nominated.
I'm getting chills just thinking about the fucking, yeah, this is.
That last scene with Delroy Lindo. Oh my God.
I need an outlet because for Malcolm X, I need to do something to, because I will get into it right now.
You need an hour and a half to talk about Malcolm X into a microphone. Yeah. So. If it was a makeup Oscar, great.
Right, yeah.
He deserved a makeup Oscar.
I never saw Hurricane, though.
It's just okay. Mm. What's something that is fascinating is that it's directed by Norman Jewison. I don't know if you know this because I just learned it this week. Norman Jewison was supposed to direct Malcolm X.
Oh, really?
And Spike Lee and other black filmmakers were like, are you fucking kidding me? And Norman Jewison, to his credit, was like, you know what? You're right. Spike Lee, you can do it. And I genuinely think that Denzel was like, I'm going to do this movie with this guy to like thank him for that. And it is a little bit more of a white savior movie because there's these Canadians who help him get out of prison. But Denzel's still really great in it. Because the reason I wanted to watch it, first of all, I haven't seen it since it came out. But I was kind of like, well, he was nominated in between Malcolm X and Training Day. So if they needed to give him a makeup Oscar, wouldn't they have given it to him for The Hurricane? And then I kind of watched it. I was like, okay, I can see why they skipped it. Like,
so
obviously,
much.
He's still so great.
Right, but
like, it's not this level.
They all can't be winners.
Right. And the other thing I'll say about Denzel's win here is... he's playing against type to the extent that he has a type, mm-hmm. you know, he, especially in the 90s, he really did this run of like upstanding men of decency.
Yes.
and a little even understated often.
Yeah.
Not King Kong ain't got shit on me. Yeah.
So I do think part of it was like, oh, we're seeing something different from the greatest actor of all time period. So exactly. Now what made today different? What made this mm-hmm. performance different?
Yeah.
Funny you should mention, I'm skipping ahead in my facts a little bit. This also started with a white director, Davis Guggenheim.
Sure.
I've heard of that person.
He directed An Inconvenient Truth. Became mainly
that is why I've heard of that person.
A documentarian. Yes. He directed It Might Get Loud. He directed Waiting for Superman.
Yep. Okay.
He named me Malala. Like he's done a lot of TV. He did Deadwood and ER and NYPD Blue, and this was going to be his jump to.
And David Ayer is white, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
When Davis Guggenheim was attached, it was Matt Damon and Samuel L. Jackson.
No,
much different movie.
Ooh. Now, I don't like it.
No, because you expect that from Sam, you know?
Yeah. And him over the top is comedic. And not right. to say that I don't love him and right. over the, mm-hmm. like, we a national treasure.
Yes.
Just to be clear.
Right. In case there's any confusion, there's no Samuel L. slander on this podcast.
Yes. But it's not the right tone.
No.
Samuel L. Jackson became unattached. Then they got to Denzel, and Denzel said, please replace this guy with good Antoine Fuqua, and they did.
Nice.
What did Antoine Fuqua do before this?
This is only his, we're all over my facts.
Sorry.
and the first person offered the Hoyt role was Eminem.
This is before or after 8 Mile?
Right before. He turned it down because he was focused on 8 Mile.
I don't think it would have landed the same. I think, again, like the tone wouldn't have been right.
I can see it. But I don't
Eminem know if I believe have the in range. His uncompromising goodness.
That part. Yeah.
This is just the third film for Antoine Fuqua after Replacement Killers and Bait.
Huh. I don't know if I've ever seen either of those.
I don't think I've seen
I don't think
one.
I have.
I think this was the first
No, Replacement
one for
Killers,
me.
Chow Yun-Fat. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have seen that.
And the second
Chow Yun-Fat.
The second produced screenplay for David Ayer after U-571.
Which I have seen.
This guy, that he immediately followed this up by writing Fast and the Furious. He wrote Dark Blue. He wrote SWAT.
In The Watch, too.
And then
he's written a lot of cop movies.
When he got into directing, it stepped up. He did Street Kings. He did End of Watch. He did Fury. He wrote and directed Fury, which is a very underrated movie.
I still have to see that.
I've never seen it, yeah.
Oh, it's really
I've,
good.
I've heard, I think from you, I've
yeah.
heard it.
Right,
good.
Yeah. It's been in AQ forever.
And then he made Suicide Squad, and that was that. Like Suicide Squad Bright, which was like the Netflix Will Smith shooting zombies cop movie.
Yeah, I saw that.
Tax collector, beekeeper, working man. Like, since 2020, he has only done Jason Statham stuff.
Actually, you know what?
Or Jason Statham adjacent.
Right. I feel like that might be a good fit for him.
Yeah. You know, yeah. Like, you know, find your muse.
Yeah.
That's,
Where were we? Okay. We did that. We did the original casting. We were still in expensive baubles.
Oh, wow.
And Denzel lost to Russell Crowe at the Globes.
Silly.
It incorrect, but...
For A Beautiful Mind?
Yeah.
Silly.
Yeah. Anybody want to guess the two MTV Movie Awards this film claimed?
Best villain?
Monologue? Yeah, best villain.
Best villain is correct. Where's the list? Because it's great. Denzel defeats Aaliyah in Queen of the Damned.
I'm sorry. Rest in peace. I'm sorry.
That movie was trash.
Christopher Lee in Lord of the Rings, The Fellowship of the Ring.
Okay.
Tim Roth in Planet of the Apes.
Oh, brother.
And Zhang Ziyi in Rush Hour 2.
Oh, come on. They weren't even trying.
Yeah.
This was, you said best monologue. King Kong Ain't Got Nothing on Me, which is how they write it, incorrect, was nominated for Best Line, but lost to Reese Witherspoon in Legally Blonde, saying...
like it's hard?
No, saying, oh, I like your outfit too, except when I dress up as a frigid bitch, I try not to look so constipated.
That's a... What?
That's not one of the lines from that movie.
One?
That defeated King Kong Ain't Got Shit on Me.
Crazy.
And defeated There's More to Life Than Just Being Really, Really, Really Ridiculously Good Looking from Zoolander.
No wonder that doesn't exist anymore.
Also does not exist anymore. The Best Cameo Award, which was claimed by this film.
I was going to say that had to be like Dr. Dre, Snoop Dogg, Macy Snoop Gray.
Snoop Dogg won the best cameo.
Macy Gray.
Well, I am upset that I was disappointed that... Be Real from Cypress Hill didn't show up. Because I feel like he should have been one of the cholos at Sleepy's house. His song was there, but...
Yeah. Hector was in this. Yes, I can't remember. Right. I'm sorry, Hector, whose name is something completely else.
Snoop
And man of all ethnicities, Cliff Curtis.
Yes.
What I really love is that they couldn't narrow best cameo down to five. It was too cameo heavy that year. Snoop Dogg defeating Charlton Heston in Planet of the Apes, David Bowie in Zoolander, Dustin Diamond in Maid, Kylie Minogue in Moulin Rouge, and Molly Ringwald in Not Another Teen Movie.
Kylie Minogue in Moulin Rouge is a great nomination.
I didn't know she was in
She's the Green Fairy, I think.
I've only seen it once, and I was in the hospital when I watched
that's
it.
That's the perfect place to watch it.
It was a fever dream.
Exactly.
God, we need this award show back. I remember watching it, too, because what clued me into remembering watching it is that one of the three musical performances was Kelly Osbourne singing Papa Don't Preach, introduced by her father.
Oh, yeah.
Can't like it.
I think this is Eminem doing Without Me. I think that's the one where there were like 50 M&Ms.
Yes,
lining
I think
the
you're
eyes.
Right. Yeah, they storm in from the outside. From outside.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. what else? There was a TV series. Did you know there was a Training Day TV series?
Did yes. not know that. Who was in it?
Starring Bill Paxton. That ran for 13 episodes in 2017. Two problems there. It was the lowest rated drama on CBS, which there's a lot of competition.
Mm.
And Bill Paxton died after four episodes had aired.
It was after Big Me, or what is it? Big Love.
Mm-hmm.
So wait, who played the trainee?
I don't know how neatly it scanned
okay.
on the, it existed in the Training Day universe, not like right. it was an
but I assume Bill Paxton was in Bad Cop.
Justin Cornwell is the other
I don't know who that is
credited person. Alonzo is mentioned in the series.
Okay. Huh.
And I regret to inform you, but I don't think you'll have to worry about it. There is a prequel in development.
Nope.
Called Training Day, Day of the Riot, about Alonzo during the Rodney King riot.
Actually, nope. I would watch that.
It's been
Hang on. Yeah. I assume we're not talking about some kind of creepy de-aged Denzel.
Probably his son.
I'm just going to read the whole thing. In October 2019.
I would watch this so much.
So it's been in development since 2019.
Oh,
which
so
is not
it's
a good
not going to exist.
It was reported that Warner Brothers is developing a prequel to Training Day. The prequel follows a young Alonzo Harris, so it's probably somebody else, in late April 1992, 2 days before the verdict of the Rodney King trial and the associated LA riots. The prequel, named Training Day, Day of the Riot, was set to start production in California in February 2022. In March 2025, Fuqua confirmed the project was still in development, that he would not direct it, and that the script was still under revision. So
I mean, if that's the thing that flips him into the bad cop or whatever,
mm-hmm.
maybe
mm-hmm. that would be interesting.
I think this could be a good movie, but I also don't think we'll ever see it.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Somebody write a fanfic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Sean, do you remember when you used to work at Pittsburgh Magazine years ago, you were like, someone is claiming that Training Day is the first movie from a black director to win an Oscar. And I was like, I will not rest until I disprove this. And I don't actually know what the true answer to that trivia question is. I just know that's not true because the theme from Shaft won.
Yeah, we landed on this theme from Shaft as the evidence that this was not true. This was a mistaken belief that was walked back. Like, for a week, we were talking about Antoine Fuqua as the first black director to win Best Director, which simply did not happen.
He wasn't even nominated.
No. And then we were trying to figure out what...
No black director has won Best Director.
Also that.
It's just awful.
We were trying to figure out what factoid we were getting confused with.
Uh-huh.
And we landed on, is it that? It's also not that. We don't know what we thought, but everyone loves Pittsburgh's own Antoine Fuqua.
Yes.
Google is not helpful. It's saying that a documentary short directed by Roger Ross Williams was the first film directed by a black person to win an Academy Award.
All right.
But that was 2010.
Well, that's long after.
Right.
Yeah.
Shaft. Yeah.
Yep. AI is worthless.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about Denzel Washington.
And how great he is.
It's from the moment we meet him. And the acting that he does here is it's like, you know, when you watch a chess master playing three games at the same time, because he is manipulating Jake on so many levels simultaneously
from first second
that both Jake and
his
Ethan
little tiny glasses.
I know, right?
Both Jake and Ethan are clearly going like,
okay, fine. I'll shoot him.
Every way that I think you want me to react to you is clearly wrong.
Right.
But I don't...
I don't know what the right answer is. Tell me what the right answer is.
I would find this person unbearable to be around.
Jake or Alonzo?
Alonzo.
Oh,
I
God.
Hate people who are always fucking with you.
Yes.
I hate it.
Right. And I was thinking about that too. It's like, he has no idea. Like, when, like, nobody, does anybody know when he's like fucking around?
Right.
Or he's like, because he's, the whole scene when he's got dude by Roger.
Yeah.
At gunpoint, he's telling him to shoot him. And
exactly.
He's like,
he thinks that he's fucking around with him. Right. And that he's dead.
Right.
Which is what would happen to me. There's no way I would make it through this day alive.
I wrote, if I'm Jake, this is a 17-minute movie. Because when he's like, smoke the weed. No, not going to do that. If you were on the street and you refused, they would shoot you. Right. I'm like, I'd say, oh, shit. Well, I don't really want this
clearly,
job.
Clearly, I'm in the wrong unit.
Yeah. Hey, no hard feelings. I'm going to go. See you later.
Which brings me to... They're supposed to be undercover cops, but it doesn't seem like they're very undercover.
No, everyone knows who he is.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't understand. Like, so that whole thing of like, you know, smoke it because you have to kind of thing is like, I don't, yeah.
That is honestly one of the things I think is so great about this movie is the like, you know, it reminds me a little bit of like Omar on the Wire, where it's like everyone knows who Alonzo is. And
right.
And then that scene at the end when everybody like turns their back on him,
right.
Like, somewhat literally,
right.
is... So, so effective.
Especially, when, like, he walks into somebody's neighborhood and they're all like, hey, yeah, thanks for that thing you did, blah, blah, blah. And he walks away. It's like, I can't stand that motherfucker.
Right, exactly.
It's like, okay, so that gives us a little bit of like, all right, we kind of know how, what the true feelings are.
Exactly.
But, to the script, it's paced out so perfectly where, like, scene one, you're like, this guy's rough, but he's got to be the best cop around.
Right.
And it just chips away little bit by little bit until you're like, oh, he's pure evil.
Yeah.
But even halfway through, you're like, I think he's the bad guy, but I'm not 100% sure yet.
Right.
That speech about how I killed him and that's better than just trying to arrest him. You're like, well, maybe.
Yes,
kind of.
That's like he's like not just manipulating Ethan and everybody around him, like, it's us too, like the audience, like,
yeah.
We have no idea like where this dude is coming from, which is like, which makes me wonder, does he actually care? Was at any point did he actually care about the neighborhood? Did he believe anything that he was saying in himself, or was this just all fucking
bluster?
Bullshit? Yeah, just because it's all about that dollar bills.
I think he's all about the power. I mean, the way he conducts himself is, if I manipulate these people from a position of authority, then I get to be the actual king. And I get to have my four wives and however many children and go where I want. And
right.
You know,
well,
he is completely, you know, not dismissive, but he is not particularly bothered by the Russian mob is coming to kill you.
Right.
I feel like he doesn't necessarily believe it.
Yeah. Even when they're shooting him, they're like, he's kind of like, I'm surprised this is happening.
Genuinely, I completely think that he thinks that he is invincible to a certain extent. And you'd think that after the neighborhood turns their back on him, that he would sort of realize that maybe he's not. But I completely agree with you that his reaction when he is murdered is like, really?
Didn't think this would go this far.
Oh, so, I mean, and that gives us even more evidence that he is an unredeemable character,
yeah.
Like completely to the very fucking last breath.
Yeah.
Of you, and you're still in your bullshit. Like, you've got your full of bullet holes.
What do we think about this as hang on, I'm trying to figure out the right way to say this. You know how that people say that there are no anti-war films?
No.
So basically, I don't remember who's the famous the person that is attributed to, but
any cinematic depiction of war inherently glorifies war.
Correct.
Yeah.
I feel like that might also be true about movies about cops. Like, this is a movie, like, at the time this was criticized for, like, cops can't be this evil, and now it's like, oh yeah, they're all this evil.
Uh-huh.
And like, Ethan Hawke is the unbelievable one, you know what I mean? But I think that people watch this that are like, yeah, for Alonzo.
So,
like, get him.
So, wait,
you are king of the streets.
So, what you're saying, so you think it goes for also cop movies. So you're saying that
yeah.
all of these movies, no matter if there's a bad cop or not, they're still pro-cop.
It's still propaganda on a certain level.
Okay. And in this sense, on a certain level of that, just because he was like, quote unquote, like the one bad one. And then so like...
Well, obviously he's got that whole crew of bad guys.
That's what I'm saying. But just like, but Ethan is the good guy.
Yeah.
So... he is the one that we are putting our faith into for the cup.
That isn't what I meant, but actually I agree with it. What I meant was that Denzel is like so cool in his evilness.
Gotcha.
That he, like people
it's still like,
it's
fuck like, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
So, all right, we'll get
and
to it.
And so I was reading Letterboxd reviews and the critic Brandon Wilson said like, he doesn't like this movie. And he was saying like, I fear the day that they make a similar movie about ICE agents.
Mm.
And that was, that chilled me to the bone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ugh. Oh God.
Right.
You know, like, that's like
no,
10
that,
years.
That, that literally took me out. I was like, I don't think my brain works anymore.
Right.
Considering this. So instead, I'll change the subject and say, hey, Snoop Dogg's surprisingly good.
Snoop Dogg is a good actor.
He is.
Should I watch Bones? I saw that scene and I was like, maybe I should watch Bones.
It's not bad. It's all right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Snoop is much better than Dre.
I was about to say.
I didn't even recognize him.
Ugh.
Colin pointed it out. And he's better than Macy Gray, who is just so, like, it's just too distracting for me with her silly little voice.
Yes. And is that her real voice?
Like, it must be.
Or is this a thing that she's, it's a game she's playing?
It must be her voice.
She's it has the attitude of we cast a local celebrity in this production of Annie, you know? And they're trying. Boy, are they trying.
It's like Rick Seebeck shows up as FDR.
Yeah, exactly. It's the only time. There's a certain breed of actor that, like, you can tell when they're thinking, my scene partner has no idea what the fuck.
Yeah.
Jude Law is the king of this. Like, watch Jude Law look at Cameron Diaz in The Holiday.
Mm. I'm shorting out. She's so good in that movie.
All I'll say, we can disagree, but I will insist that Jude Law agrees with me on this one.
But actually, you mentioned Jude Law. This reminded me something about the trailer. Like, you can't tell from what I put in the episode because it's visually, but they kind of imply that Denzel Washington is the cop who's, they're like, you know, in one day, you'll see what pushes this cop to the breaking point. And it's like sort of implied that Denzel Washington is the good cop. The reason I was reminded of this because of Jude Law is... it just seemed like the trailer was edited by someone who hadn't actually watched the movie. There was a Jude Law movie, Cold Mountain, Renee Zellweger won an Oscar for it, that said, a soldier fighting for freedom. And he was a Confederate soldier.
Oh, wow.
Also, isn't that the movie where Cameron Diaz edits trailers?
That
the Holiday?
Is,
yeah. All right.
I didn't realize that's a
full
I've seen
circle.
It once or twice.
We can agree to disagree about the talent of Cameron Diaz is occasionally good. I don't give her enough credit. I think there is a before she retired. I think there's a few where she's
unretired.
Yeah. Before her temporary retirement, I think there's a few where she was completely checked out. And I think The Holiday is one of them.
OK,
so speaking of local celebrities,
anyway.
Did you know there like the filming was actually done in the streets of L.A. and they were like actual local residents and gang members.
Oh.
And some of the gang members, I think they like got permission from the gang members. From the gang.
Like, can I put your face?
Right. No, can we film here?
It was like like they were going to the mayor to set up. They were going into like, we know this is your neighborhood.
Right. Oh, wow.
Yeah. And then notorious gang neighborhoods, including Imperial Courts and Baldwin Village, a.k.a. the jungle.
Yikes.
Yeah.
And as was probably apocryphally depicted in the movie Michael, the deal was, yeah, if you put the gang in the movie.
Yeah.
They were like, we will make sure you're okay, but
we gotta be there. Mm-hmm. I gotta meet Denzel.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense.
Yeah, you know, great negotiations, guys.
Well, and the places felt very authentic. It reminded me of Candyman in that way, where it's like, This
looks like a real shithole apartment.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. By the way, our Letterboxd list is just two guys and we're having a bad time.
That's so many movies.
The Nice right. Guys, Fight Club, In Bruges, pretty much every Martin McDonagh movie. The Lighthouse, Midnight Run, Collateral. Yeah, it's
Midnight Run is two guys having a great time.
It's a sturdy setup for 2 hours of entertainment.
Well, I've got a couple of, if anybody out there wants to do, I was thinking about doing some sort of bracket with this, with the Rogue Cup, Bad Cop movies.
All right.
So we've got, obviously, Alonzo, Training Day, Bud White in L.A. Confidential, Gary Oldman in Leon, The Professional, The Lieutenant and Bad Lieutenant.
Yeah. Both versions.
Right, yeah. The Departed, Serpico, Copland, Street Kings.
Isn't he a good cop in Serpico? It's been decades since I've seen that movie.
The
bad precincts, guy in Serpico.
The NYPD.
Got it. He's the only good cop.
And like Face Off and End of Watch. So that's what I've got so far.
I love this.
So I don't know. I mean, if you want to do a double feature, but actually, like, I think End of Watch is probably the better double feature for this.
Yeah.
With this Training Day and maybe The Professional, because I mean, when you get past all the ick of it all, Gary Oldman is fantastic.
That
in The Professional.
I have such mixed feelings about that movie because it's so good.
I know. I fucking hate it. But I love it.
It is super creepy.
I hate how much I love that movie.
Have you watched Dust Bunny yet?
No, not
my
yet.
My review of Dust Bunny was like, well, this proves that The Professional need not have been that creepy.
Thank you. Yes. I mean, really, honestly.
Yeah. So weird. But weird movie. Also, one of my other problematic faves is Beautiful Girls. Natalie Portman is the most beautiful woman on earth.
Right.
It's probably even more disturbing.
Yeah.
But I really like that movie.
I really love that Afghan Wigs cover.
Literally just, oh my God, Be For Real is...
That song has no business. No business going that hard.
Yeah, it's so good.
But yeah, back to The Professional is that I don't think a week goes by when I don't say, everyone!
very good.
Shall we rate it? This is a really good
movie. I don't actually know. I don't have a number, so you two go first, please.
95.
Woo!
Wow. I can't quite get into the 90s, but really 88.
I am lower, and the reason I'm lower is because I find this movie periodically really hard to watch. Like the scene in the tub, I like feel like I have to watch through my hair even though I know it's going to be okay.
The one thing that makes I walked away from that, like, his Ethan Hawke's neck must have hurt like a motherfucker. Yes, after that
I was thinking of like the tailbone area, because he's so bent.
There's just an intensity to this movie which I respect but don't enjoy. Got if it. That makes sense. So I'm going to only give it 80. But this is, I just really think this is a great movie. And I think that it is underrated.
Yeah.
I think that we, you know, we quote King Kong Ain't Got Shit on Me, but we don't talk about, and we talk about Denzel's performance. We don't talk about this as a good film, and I think it really is.
Yeah.
87 and two thirds. Before you ask, no, not quite to the top 10.
That feels right.
The top 10 cutoff is, right there. The top 10 cutoff is 88 and a third. So we're within a point of it.
What was it?
A Few Good Men. This would be like around 13 or 14. This is the same rating as Speed. Speed wins the tiebreaker because Robin gave Speed a 96.
So it's not better than Speed.
No, not better than Speed. Do we even need to go to the bingo card?
No.
No. The three wise men. None of the three wise men are on this card.
Oh man, that scene, I can't believe we didn't talk about that. I love the you know, talking about how great Denzel's performance is. I talk about this all the time with improv, is like so much of what makes a scene is a status difference between the characters, and watching status shift is incredibly satisfying.
Yeah.
And it is so satisfying to suddenly see Alonzo in this different mode of playing subservient almost. And it's so jarring, and it's so good.
And especially when they say to do something, or he has suggested they do something, I forget what it is, and he's like, well, just go ahead and, for example, kill him. And they're like, really? You gotta, or don't. That's fine. No,
yes. Anyway, and also, you know, Tom Berenger and Harris Yulin are really good in that one scene.
Yeah.
All right. Sorry. Back to the episode.
The bingo card is on hiatus for retooling. So it's time for You Can't Handle the Truth. Camila, what you been watching?
I've mostly been watching TV. What did we just finish watching? I'm sorry, I need to pull up my Letterboxd.
That's okay. I can always cut this out. Pew, pew, pew. Pew, pew, pew.
No, I don't think I've watched a new movie since last time we saw it.
I also have been, I haven't been to the cinema since the last time we recorded, which is a long drought for me. I caught up to a couple things on streaming. I watched They Will Kill You. Annoying.
Yeah.
Which one's that?
With Zazie Beetz.
Oh, yeah.
And I watched Good Luck, Have Fun, Don't Die. Even more annoying, but slightly better. That was one of those movies where, I think that Colin said it was made in a lab to annoy me. it was one of those movies where I barely made it through the film, but I kind of was like, I've invested enough time. I deserve to like be able to log this.
Yeah.
And then I opened up Letterboxd to do that and everybody else gave it like 4 stars. And I was like, oh, I watched a different movie than everyone else. I watched an annoying movie and they watched something clever.
Did I talk about The Strangers Part 3?
I think so.
Okay.
Or do you have further thoughts on it?
No.
Okay.
I mean,
I guess I always list in the email.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Let me check.
It's weird that keeps happening and I haven't seen any of them and you're the only person I know who has seen any of them.
Yeah, seriously, don't bother.
Yeah.
No, you didn't talk about it. My apologies.
I didn't.
Yeah.
I didn't. Oh, okay. So I did watch. Did I talk about Office Romance?
No.
Okay. Wow. Okay. Mm-hmm. Sorry.
Office Romance, is it worth my time?
Yes.
Okay.
So yes, Office Romance was good.
Yeah.
Surprisingly, but I also like out of the lens of a J-Lo rom-com. Like,
right.
Don't roll in there and be like, oh, I've watched Training Day. I want to see something on the same level. No, it's a J-Lo rom-com, but with Brett Goldstein.
Like, exactly. I need to watch this.
It's really good. I had fun. I enjoyed it. Maternal Instinct documentary. Whoa, what the fuck? Basically, this girl tricks a bunch of people into thinking that she's pregnant, including her boyfriend, live-in boyfriend.
Oh my god,
who didn't see her naked or anything for like 10 months.
Because I can't handle this.
I didn't know she wasn't pregnant. And then she ends up, you know, spoilers, but she ends up, murdering a woman and cutting her baby out.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
I saw a Ripped from the Headlines TV episode about this.
Ripped from the Universe.
Years ago. Oh.
I'm sorry.
Exactly. Exactly. And the short-lived TV show The Inside, which whenever they do that, like, what's a TV show you're the only person who remembers meme? I'm always like, that one. But Colin asked me if I wanted to watch this doc, and I was like, nope. Yep.
No. Yeah. But if you like that sort of thing, I highly suggest it. And there's apparently a bunch of shit that Netflix kept out of that. And me and my girls have been like this deep dive of podcasts on it. And then so, yes, The Strangers Chapter 3. I'm just going to go ahead and read my Letterboxd review.
Please.
The idea of expanding on the original masterpiece is like if I were to go to a restaurant and have an amazing piece of tiramisu. I go home and try to make tiramisu, even though I have never done it and I don't have a recipe. The result is terrible and gives me food poisoning. To be clear, this movie is that homemade tiramisu.
Beautiful metaphor.
Thank you.
Very well done. So at no point should I be like, I want to catch up to that.
Sure don't. Nope. Don't do it, man. Just go back and watch the original.
I have 4 new movies to talk about. Toy Story 5. Did you not see Toy Story 5?
I haven't been to the cinema since Disclosure Day. I've been busy.
I gave it 3 stars and not a like. And I'm surprised.
Oh, wow.
I'm surprised that I'm very surprised that this is getting slightly better reviews than Toy Story 4 because I thought we did that on the show and I thought that was pretty delightful. This felt very like shit. How are we gonna get another movie out of this?
Huh.
Particularly because no spoilers, but I don't think they stuck the landing on the toys versus tech thing that they're selling it about.
Right.
There are some very cute and funny scenes. It's not, you can't say it's a bad movie because
it's a kids movie.
When we love these characters and it's, you know, it works. It just felt the most unnecessary of any of them to me, which is a little bit disappointing. The Death of Robin Hood.
What?
Hugh Jackman, yeah.
Hugh Jackman plays Old Man Logan, but it's Robin Hood. But he's kind of a bad guy. and something, you know, he has a chance to redeem himself late in his life. What's her name? Jodie Comer is the the kind-hearted nun on a prioress on an island that nurses him back to health. Bill Skarsgård is Little John. Did not know it was him until the credits rolled.
Huh. Really?
That's what he does.
He was no hero.
Is that the tagline of this movie? Oh,
yes. I thought I was going to have the best Letterboxd review because I just said Sherwood Combat with 3 exclamation points. Because the first act of this is a brutal action movie with horrific, horrific fight scenes. I thought that was going to be the best Letterboxd review, and then I looked at the others and found The Greatest Bowman. So that'll win it. This is not going to be for everyone. It's the director of Pig and Quiet Place Year One. So very dark, very dirty. Mm-hmm. But I kind of liked it. You know, it's a little darker. It is not necessarily an enjoyable movie, but I think it is a pretty good movie. And no one's watching it. Like, no one went to see this.
I didn't even know it was out, like, existed.
And it's A24. I bet you A24 felt the backrooms hype coming and literally put all of their effort into pumping the backrooms. But anyway, I think that is if that sounds like you'd like it, you might like it.
A quick aside, I noticed you saw Backrooms again and you were like, and I was correct.
Yeah, my rating did not change.
Yes. I love that experience, by the way. I have absolutely been like, I want to see this movie again and see if it changes how I feel about it. Nope.
Mary Beth didn't see it with me the first time. She was really excited to see it. We did go indoors this time.
Yep.
And I still like what I liked about it. The performances are really good. The setting is really good. Fumbles at the finish line.
My sister-in-law asked me if I should let her 12-year-old watch it, and I said yes.
That one scene's pretty fucked
up. Yeah, I said, I was like, if he'll be scared, but he wants to be scared. Mm.
If it weren't for that one scene.
Okay.
You know.
I do know.
I think that's too far, but I don't know.
You still haven't seen it, right?
No.
Okay.
Mary Beth, we started arguing because she says it's better than Obsession.
It is better than Obsession.
And she put out a Facebook poll and said, everybody comment yellow heart for Backrooms, red heart for Obsession.
Yeah, I don't go on Facebook.
And it was pretty 50-50. The majority of the responses split on gender lines.
Yeah.
Most women picked Backrooms. Most men picked Obsession.
Why could that
which,
be?
if anything supports Robin's theory, and so I will move on. I double featured Jackass 5 and Supergirl. Yes, it was Super Ass Weekend. Jackass is fresh on Rotten Tomatoes and Supergirl is rotten, and that is backwards. And I am a defender of the Jackass movies. This is barely more than a clip show.
Yeah.
There is it's a 90-minute movie. Maybe 30, 35 minutes of it are new. Maybe 30 minutes of it are old stuff we haven't seen before, and the rest is stuff we've seen before. Mm. And the stuff we've seen before is the funniest stuff in the movie. I laughed harder at the giant hand.
You say that like I know what you're talking about.
I know, right?
You don't know about the giant
my
hand?
My one experience with Jackass is when I went to see Everything Everywhere All at Once, they played whatever Jackass movie was in theaters at that time instead, and I left without being able to see the movie. I later went back, of course. But okay,
so this is not for this room.
Yeah.
I famously defend these movies because I think that slapstick is important, and this is kind of the only place it exists.
Yeah.
But this just wasn't enough of a movie, and they really could have, they added young people to the cast for the fourth one, so they had people whose bodies they could
that's actually really smart.
But because they knew this was the last one, they didn't let the young people do much. And so it's left with these 55-year-olds. Like, Johnny Knoxville is not allowed to have another concussion. They can't do much. Mm-hmm. So they do all of the like butts and poop stuff because they can still do that, which is, it made me sad about aging, which is probably not what a Jackass movie should do.
I Jackass movie made you sad about aging. I will no longer be able to throw myself down a flight of stairs.
Life is unfair.
That was one of the scenes we hadn't seen before. Legitimate. This was pretty good. They were like, we weren't allowed to show this because MTV said it was too easy to imitate. And then they cut and they just take a big cardboard box, put like a few pillows in there, put Knoxville in it, and roll them down some stairs.
That is too easy to imitate.
Yeah, they're like, I don't think
I can see why they didn't want that.
So I'm not going to say I didn't laugh in there. But also, I mean, I know it was the 2 p.m. show on Thursday. I had the theater to myself.
Oh, not great.
And that made it sad, too.
Yeah.
But then I went and saw Supergirl, and I enjoyed it. And it's not getting panned. It's at 56%.
Every review I've seen has been like, it's pretty good. Like, yeah. Go see it if you want to.
Yeah, I'm not going to swear, tell you it's a classic. I will say that Millie Alcock is fantastic, and I want her to be in every DC movie.
Sure.
You know, the action is a little whatever, and it is one of those movies that does a lot of, like, we're here and we haven't solved the problem yet. Now we're on this planet and we haven't solved the problem yet. It doesn't go a lot of places, but I don't know. It's one of those where it's just like, I had a fun superhero time with good performers, but I don't know. Not everything has to be the best thing you've ever seen. Right. We're just doing the thing,
right.
And doing it pretty well. So I would tell you to see that, and I'm sad about Jackass.
Can I take a second to talk about the purported greatest film of all time?
Yes, okay. Absolutely.
So I watched Jean Dielman, 23, Quai de Commerce, 1080, Bruxelles.
Look at you.
Which I did have to practice.
Congratulations.
Which nice. Won the last sight and sound poll. If you're unfamiliar with this, the British Film Institute polls. Last time they polled 1,000 critics and 800 and some answered. Mm-hmm. And they give their 10 greatest films of all time, unranked. Mm-hmm. And then they rank which films got the most mentions on these lists. Bicycle Thieves won the first poll in 1952, which shocked me. Then Citizen Kane won for 5 decades or 6 decades. And then Vertigo won until 2022. And suddenly, this incredibly weird Belgian movie tops the list, and everybody was like, what the fuck? At the time, I was like, I barely even heard of this movie. Like, I had
never heard those words before.
I was right. Gonna say, I'm like, I know I've seen this really long title listed somewhere, but that was like all I knew about it. The movie is 3.5 hours of a woman doing chores. I fucking loved it. I 100% understand why so many people are putting this in their top 10 list. It is unlike anything I've ever seen before, even though I've seen so many movies that have tried to be like it. Do you know what I mean? It's so incredibly well done. The camera barely moves. You'll just watch her peel a whole pile of potatoes. And there's so much in that performance. You end up feeling like you really, really know this woman. And I think that even Camila's face. Camila's eyes are getting narrower and narrower. And I kept thinking about it from the person, you know, it came out in 1975. Okay. And I keep thinking about
thank you.
It.
Thank you for
from that perspective, yes. Of like, I do really think there are probably a lot of men who watch this movie and for the first time ever considered the inner life of a woman.
Oh, that's how that gets done. There's not a fairy that peels the potatoes.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, it's a fascinating endeavor to watch the greatest film of all time. You know what I mean? It's just instantly interesting. And so there, it does have that benefit now of, you know, you watch it considering it through that lens.
Yeah. That makes more sense that, you know, it was met in 1975. Yeah. Like, okay. Now
yeah. It is something that I do not recommend to normies, but I really think that cinephiles deserve giving it a shot.
Where did you watch it?
Criterion Channel, but I think it's also on Homebox. Yeah.
Somebody showed it in the theater, and I remember thinking, like, that's really something I should go to. Do not have 4 hours that
day. Yeah. Yeah. I read a lot of Letterboxd. I always, when I love a movie, I always read the one-star reviews on Letterboxd. Yeah. And so many people are like, I had to watch this at film school, and it fucking bored me to tears. You know what I mean? And a lot of people kept mentioning The Emperor's New Clothes. They were like, people only like this movie because it's supposed to be great. And I was like, can't tell you for sure that that's not true, but I fucking loved this movie. Yeah.
I'm looking at the top 10. How many of the top 10 have you seen? I've seen 5 of the current
top 10. What are they?
And I want you to tell me, is Jean Dillman, etc., better than number 2, Vertigo?
Yes.
Is it better than number 3, Citizen Kane?
No.
Is it better than number 4, Tokyo Story, which I have
I've never seen that.
I have not seen In the Mood for Love.
I have also not seen In the Mood for Love. And wait, put a pin in it. Okay.
That's number 5. Is it better than 2001 A Space Odyssey?
No.
Is it better than Beau Travail, which is...
Also never seen it.
I watched Beau Travail, which is fantastic.
I put it on one day and fell asleep.
Oh, that's the thing. Yeah. Like, it is one of those. It is one of those movies that you're like, wow, what a work of art. I don't care in any way, but like
that might be how you react to Jean Dillman, Ventoir, Quai de Commerce, Mille Quatre Vents, Bruxelles.
I'm like, this is not the 7th best movie ever made. Mulholland Drive is 8.
Not as good as Mulholland. Yeah.
No. Man with a Movie Camera from 1929.
Not seen it.
Singing in the Rain is 10.
I have only seen Singing in the Rain once 35 years ago. Didn't care for it. But I was 8. You know what I mean?
Go back.
Okay. I've only seen 3 of those on the list.
The director's poll, by the way, goes 2001, Citizen Kane, The Godfather, Jean Dillman, Tokyo Story, Vertigo, 8.5, Tarkovsky's Mirror, Close Up, In the Mood for Love, Persona.
There's a reason we don't really pay attention to the director's poll. What I was going to say about In the Mood for Love is that this was my inaugural, what I am calling, Not Too Late Tuesdays, where basically one of those movies that I feel like I should have already seen,
Not Too Late
Tuesdays, I am going to watch every Tuesday. So like In the Mood for Love is definitely going to be one of the next 5 weeks of Not Too Late Tuesdays. So
interesting.
Look forward to that. That's I made a tag on my Letterboxd, Hitch Died, if you don't follow me.
And for the regular normies, I'm just going to pivot back over here to TV and tell you to watch Interview with the Vampire Lestat season. It's fucking amazing. And Sam Reed, it's like Tom Cruise could never. And I love Tom Cruise as Lestat. I do.
And listen to our episode.
Right, yeah. But fuck yeah, this dude knows what he's doing. And they're releasing actual music. That's
all cool.
That he's singing. He's
I love when they do that.
He's performing these songs.
I'm still listening.
As the Vampire Lestat. And I really want him to go on tour as the Vampire Lestat.
Bet he will.
So it is great. That's what I've been watching.
The thing I said actually happened. I'm just watching 20-minute chunks of The X-Files whenever I have a few minutes to go. Beyond the Sea is so fucking good.
It's such a good episode. And like...
devastating, but
is that the one where her dad died? Yeah, okay, I remember that
with Brad Dourif.
Yeah,
one of the most underrated actors.
Yeah, truly.
Watch Exorcist 3, and I'm not being facetious. Watch Exorcist. Have you seen Exorcist 3?
That's the one with George C. Scott, right?
It's George C. Scott and Brad Dourif arguing in a jail cell about whether or not Satan is real.
It's basically Beyond the Sea,
right? Yeah, it's so good. It's anyway, and has one of the best jump scares in cinema history. Exorcist. I think I've said this on the show before. Let's go home. It's hot in here.
Yeah.
Time to draw a movie.
Do you want to go home or do you want to go to jail?
I want to go home. No vetoes on the board, so I'll just tell you what we're watching. What we're watching is Barbershop 2, Back in Business.
All right.
Okay.
I can handle it.
I've never seen it. Yo, I loved the original.
The ridiculous lust I had over Jane Fonda's son or whatever that kid's name is from the first one.
I do not think I knew that was Jane Fonda's son.
I think I may be speaking out of turn. You said Barbershop 2, yes?
Yes.
Okay.
Do I need to watch the first one?
Probably not.
Okay.
I mean, but why not watch it?
Yeah,
it's good.
If it's available to you. You should watch it because it's a good time.
I also loved Beauty Shop.
Yeah.
I think I like that one the best.
Oh, yeah. And then Michael Ealy.
He's so good looking. He's
Troy
beautiful,
Garrity.
Beautiful eyes.
He does. You just get lost in him. Yeah. Troy Garrity is Jane Fonda's son.
Cool.
And Tom Hayden. I don't know who Tom Hayden is.
He was her. He was one of the Chicago Seven. And he was her husband for a long time.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Both are on the Roku channel.
Great.
I don't have the Roku channel, but I do own the first one.
And you can rent them wherever.
Okay. Library it is.
That'll be fun.
Yeah.
The first one is not on the list, is it?
Good question. No, it is. They are both number one movies. Then maybe I won't because we could also land on it during Black History Month.
Also, it's always a little bit of fun when you watch a sequel without having seen the original. And then it's kind of like, I wonder if this is a reference to something.
We'll find out. That is next time. Right now, Training Day, October 5th, 2001. What was the number one song?
Destiny's Child.
No.
2001. What
the fuck was I doing? I know, right?
NSYNC?
No. I'm not saying anything because I got in too much trouble last time.
I forget what we...
What did you say that was underrated that isn't underrated? Right. Was
it Bryan Adams? It was a whole thing.
That was two episodes ago.
That's 2 episodes ago. Also, I have described this artist as underrated.
Alicia Keys?
That's the one.
Fallen?
Yeah.
Great song.
Yeah, you keep your mouth shut over there.
Yeah. Are you going to say...
I said I'm not going to say anything.
No.
Sean.
Oh, actually, she's on Dan's list, so you better not say anything. That's Dan's hall pass. Number